It was a night I was not expecting and an experience that I will never forget. Several years ago, I heard about a movement called Invisible Children. And it was started by a group of young adults who had heard about the children in Uganda who were being abducted and forced to join a rebel army. Some of them school age, the ages of the children you heard singing just now. And Invisible Children was a movement seeking to bring increased awareness worldwide to this human rights plague, this injustice that these families, these children were living under. In order to escape or help to prevent abduction, the children in these villages would actually leave their houses at night, many of them orphaned, and travel from their smaller, darker villages into the nearest local public square, public spaces where they would all gather together and lie down and attempt to sleep, out in the open where they couldn't be abducted. And as some of us heard about this, we also learned about an experience that Invisible Children was inviting communities around our country and even internationally to join in that they called the Global Night Commute. And that was inviting people to take their sleeping bags and to walk or make their way into the public square in their local town and to spend the night there. To not do anything out of the ordinary other than to sleep in a public space as a way for those people to identify with the children and also to raise increased awareness as to the nature of these human rights violations. And there was a group of young adults that were part of the church that I was a part of for a time in Missoula, Montana, who heard about this and wanted to be part of it, and there was a citywide movement to engage this experience. My son Trevor at the time was 9 years old, and he saw the video that told the story of the Ugandan children, and he was so touched that he wanted to join in the experience as well. And so the two of us made our way to the grass area outside the public courthouse and joined with the other young adults and several other adults from around the city. And we sat down and we gathered together and we listened as different people shared different stories of these Ugandan children. One story at the top of each hour, on to midnight and to 1 a.m., and eventually settling into what we would attempt to have as a night's sleep. Now, of course, even though it was a spring evening, it had to rain. And thankfully, some of our young adults brought some tarps, and so Trevor and I were bunched together in our sleeping bags underneath a tarp, hearing rain falling literally almost right on our faces. And I remember as he was getting ready to go to sleep, I asked him how he was feeling and what he was thinking. And then I asked him if he wanted to pray before he went to bed, and he said he did. And what he prayed, I'll never forget. He said, "God, these are just kids. They're kids like me. And they shouldn't have to live like this. I pray that you will set them free, so that they can be kids again." I didn't sleep that night, partly because of the rain, partly because of the rugby tournament that was also going on and people walking over us at 3 o'clock in the morning, but much more so because of the way my heart was broken open by the situation of these children and the response of my own child and these other people gathered in community. And it reminded me of a phrase that I heard from another friend years later as he was sharing about an experience of joining together with other members of the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship and going up to join with the Native American water advocates to try and stop the pipeline from going through and protect that sacred area in North Dakota in Standing Rock, which also reminded me of another experience I had in New Orleans, where some young adults led a group of adults and students to help clean up just months after the damage of Hurricane Katrina, which also reminded me of yet another experience of two trips to Israel-Palestine and a young woman named Claudia, a Palestinian Christian who was our guide. And the questions that arose were worded differently, but they resonated with the same phrase that I heard my friend share from his experience in Standing Rock. The question that was asked in those experiences wasn't, how's the cleanup going? Or how's your activism going? Or how's your pilgrimage going? The question was this, how's your prayer going? How's your prayer going? Nehemiah and Ezra were two men called into one story to give leadership to God's people who were trying to make sense of their lives after being in exile for decades in Babylon. They were living in Persia under King Artaxerxes, and Ezra was a man of the cloth. He was a priest, more naturally inclined to spiritual response to life situations. Nehemiah was a man of action. He was a civic leader, a cupbearer to the king. And yet, when he heard the situation of the people from Judah and that they were living in a situation that wasn't really any better than what they were living in Babylon, that they were living in extreme poverty and injustice, many in slavery once again, and how all of these tensions were tearing at the fabric of their community and tearing their lives apart. Nehemiah, the man of action, responds with this first action. He prays. He prays a prayer of confession. He takes part in owning the role that he and his people have played in contributing to the broken situation that they find themselves in. He identifies with his people. And as he opens himself up in that way, he also opens himself up to the heartbreak and suffering that his people are experiencing, and the weight of that injustice that they're living under. Nehemiah allows his heart to be broken by the things that break the heart of God. And one thing we do know about broken hearts is that they are open hearts. And Nehemiah finds his heart opened to compassion, which literally means suffering with another. He is suffering with his fellow people who are suffering. And he finds his heart being open to passionate presence and attentiveness to that suffering and injustice. Now, often when we hear about injustice and suffering in our world, our first instinct is to respond by trying to solve the problems. Is it not? We hear about these incredible situations that people are having to live through, and we want to identify the problem, we want to solve it, and help them get out of that situation. But how often do we first sit with our own discomfort and allow it to break our hearts open? And I wonder if part of the reason that we are reticent to initially sit in that discomfort is because there is the chance that we may discover, directly or indirectly, in one way or another, that we are somehow connected to the problems. D.L. Mayfield is a local writer, and as she describes herself, a failed missionary. She's written an account called Assimilate or Go Home. And she worked for several years with Somali refugees in our area. And she encountered this quandary as she was getting to know that community. And yet a revelation came through that quandary. She writes, as she was identifying problems and wanting to solve the problems, she writes the following: "The longer I knew my refugee friends, the more ignorant I became. Or at least this is how it seemed to me. I started off so confident, so sure of my words and actions, and over time, I became immersed in their problems, falling headfirst into a crash course on how hard it is to make it on the margins of our empire. And I ended up becoming overwhelmed and overworked and slightly bitter. I went from feeling like an expert to feeling like a saint to finally nursing the belief that I was a complete and utter fraud and failure. And yet, actually, this was the best thing that could have happened to me at the time, because it's the only way I could ever start to learn to be a listener. Out of a heart broken open by suffering and injustice, through confession and compassion, then comes response to that suffering and injustice. For Nehemiah, passionate and persistent intercession for his people and their suffering, and eventually advocacy for his people to the ruling authorities, the people he actually worked with, persistently, consistently, day after day, advocating for their rights, for their justice, for their freedom. Not unlike the widow from the first parable of Jesus that we heard just moments ago. And for our friend Eric, my friends Annie and Claudia and Trevor and those other adults gathered on that rainy night, what did that response look like? Advocacy as embodied prayer. Not just going into a private space and closing the door and praying, but allowing that private space to then be a catalyst to break out into public space and to make an equally silent but visible witness of advocacy for the rights of all of God's creatures and all of God's creation. Leads me to the question, how might all of our lives become an embodied prayer? How do we do that? Well, perhaps we could start by allowing ourselves to be awakened, to allow the news that we see and hear and read about and experience, not just around the world, but right here in our own neighborhood, right in our own families, right from the person who's right in front of us, to allow what we hear and what we experience to awaken our spirits, to awaken our awareness of what people not just are living through and going through, but what they're feeling, how it's impacting their lives. To be awakened to the Spirit within us and the Spirit among us and around us. And then to pay attention. To pay attention to the breathing and the grieving, to the coping through life and the hoping in life. To be attentive, both to what's going on and being stirred within us, and also what's going on around us. And out of that space, to feel the empowerment to be an advocate through private and public prayer, allowing those private spaces in our lives to become the empowerment to move into the public spaces that we all live in, and to embody that hope, that compassion, that prayer, that all might know the welcome, the acceptance, the justice and rights and peace that God has created for all of us, and that God has given each of us a spark of to share with someone else. It doesn't have to be part of a movement that goes and sleeps on courthouse steps for a night. It could be stopping and recognizing the person who is right in front of you on the sidewalk or at the supermarket or the post office or the coffee shop, and to acknowledge who they are and to open yourself up to the possibility of what they may be going through. Or to read that news article instead of just either getting angry and frustrated or pausing for a moment and saying, wow, that's really too bad, before you go onto the sports page, which is what I do often, to stop and to allow yourself to be awakened and to become attentive to the sighs coming out of you and the breath coming towards you. And to allow those movements to move you, even to just say hello or to acknowledge that other. The way I tried to encapsulate this for myself was with these words. With all the voices yelling and all the vices selling and all the issues confusing and all the tissues using, and all the stars falling and all the scars bawling, what's my role? What's my calling? Awaken. Attend. Advocate. Amen.